and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris. You're watching Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Malaysia's road safety statistics are pretty grim. We have the third highest road traffic mortality in the Western Pacific region, and children pay the highest price when it comes to our poor track record on road safety. Road traffic injury accounts for 14% of deaths among children aged 5 to 14 years old, making it the leading cause of child mortality in our country. Now, what can we do better to keep our children safe on the roads? Joining me now on the show is Professor Dr. Kulanthayan K.C. Mani. He is head of the Putra Injury Prevention and Safety Promotion Research Group at the Department of Community Health under UPM's Faculty of Medicine. And Shahrim Tamrin, he is a senior journalist at The Vibes. He's also a road safety activist and former board member of the Malaysian Institute for Road Safety Research, MIROS. Welcome, gentlemen, to the show. It's good of you to join me today. I mean, very important topic and a very broad one, so we'll try and cover as much ground as we can. But Professor Kula, maybe you can begin our conversation by helping us think. So when we think about road safety for children and adolescents, we think about the ways in which we can prevent death and injury through traffic collisions. What are the areas that we're talking about specific to children?
Yeah, for children, not only for children, if you see for even for adults, the most promising intervention to prevent crash and then to reduce injuries is reduction of speed. Okay. If we can reduce speed, we have two returns. One is we can manage our vehicle better, therefore we can prevent a crash. That's one. Second is, even if in the event a crash happens, it happens at a low speed, therefore we can prevent fatalities and injuries. Okay. So that's four is do whatever we can to reduce the speed. So in order to reduce speed, there are few ways we can do it. One is what we call as self-enforcement. That means we ourselves, every drivers, every vehicle users need to reduce the speed of their vehicle. That's for sure one. That's one. Second is the family enforcement here is also important, where the family can play a role by informing, by checking their immediate family members to make sure that the speed of the vehicle is low and complying with whatever the speed limit. And the third element which I see is the enforcement by the industry, by the employers. Sometimes we are more worried what will the action be taken by our employer if we violate any rules compared to the state rules.
Really?
Right. Sometimes some organizations, they are very strict. They are where they say that you're not supposed to use mobile phone while driving. Mm-hmm. Okay? So we are very worried, because if once we are being caught for that, what we are worried is there could be an action in terms of our job. Maybe there could be a cut in terms of our bonus, there could be a cut in terms of our promotion. So an action by our immediate employer is too close to us. Okay. And then the fourth is when the enforcement by the state. So if we can have all these first three layers, three players playing their role, self-enforcement, family and employer, then we will reduce the burden that we are going to shift towards the state.
Right.
So this is where I see that it's everyone has a role to play and everyone need to play their role.
If I could just follow up on that, with children in particular, the areas of vulnerability I think are particular, because children are the group that perhaps have the least access to independent transportation. They are dependent on others for their transportation. Where are the areas of vulnerability for children?
Yeah, if you see children, the vulnerability is depending on the type of road user they are. If they are a pedestrian, okay, especially they will be pedestrian mainly outside the school zone, because that is their common activity. Five times in a day, they go to school and they come back to school. When we say pedestrians for school, it doesn't limit only pedestrian from origin, from your home, you're walking towards school. As long as you have even a short activity of pedestrian,
right,
especially at a point when you're going to enter the school gate and you're going to exit the school gate, the risk outside the school is enough to create a crash. So that's why we see, no matter whether you may travel by motorcycle or by car or by school van or bus, but when they drop you off, you're going to be a pedestrian as you enter the school and as you exit. So that moment, that crucial moment, has to be well taken care. The reason why is, for a human being, when we are outside the school, as a pedestrian, when we are outside of a vehicle, the maximum transfer of energy we can tolerate is only up to 30 kilometers per hour. So say a car comes, and I'm outside the school waiting, and if I'm crossing and the car hits me, If the car speed is at 50 kilometer per hour, my body is not able to tolerate that amount of transfer of energy, and that can end up as fatal crash.
All right.
So maximum I can only tolerate up to 30 kilometers per hour.
30 kilometers is very slow. It's a very slow crawl. So technically, outside a school, you should only be driving maximum of 30
kilometers per hour. Wherever there are high pedestrian movements, especially in school zone,
yeah,
that area should be designated for 30 kilometers per hour school zone.
We don't have that.
We don't have that as gazetted. That is one way forward, I say. So that in order to make sure all kids who are in the school zone will be safe.
Okay.
That means every car user, every vehicle users have to reduce their speed in the school zone.
Okay. We'll come back to keeping children safe, particularly in the school zone. Sharim, I want to talk to you about road safety for children mean. I know you feel very passionately about the issue of underage children who ride motorcycles. Give us an understanding of the extent of the issue in Malaysia.
Thanks, Marissa. To me, this is the problem among children on motorcycle, whether they are riding or even passenger or motorcycle, actually is very, very critical. Because based on statistics alone, in the past, say, 13 years or 14 years, the statistics is grim. In fact, it's worrying. And I don't know why not anyone, especially the authorities, they're not paying serious attention about this. They are paying attention, but then they're not really doing something or doing an in-depth investigation or probing or looking at the root cause. They're not, even I can see the authorities, the government, and everybody, the estate holders, they know what's the problem, the transportation issue among children, especially in rural and towns and suburbs. But then I'm not talking about from kids going to school. I'm talking about kids on the roads by themselves, riding motorcycles, and even as passengers. And to me, it's very, very critical.
Right. I mean, we have seen this before. Right? I think all of us can think of a time where we have seen children on roads riding without helmets. They probably took their father's motorcycle, their brother's motorcycle, to nip to the shops or to have a little bit of a joyride. We have all come across that. You're saying that this is a more severe problem than just something anecdotal. It's fatalities, it's injuries, and it's an underlying issue that authorities are not addressing.
Motorcycle for kids, to me, is like a weapon. It's already a weapon. It's something like a tools. It's a killing machine. If it's in US, in the USA, they consider guns as the number one leading cause, gun violence, the number one leading cause of kids getting killed. To me, in Malaysia, kapchai or the motorcycle is actually the leading cause of death for kids in between 5 to 16 year old, and sometimes extend to 18 year old. Because statistics have shown that we know that 92% of motorcycles in Malaysia are kapchai models, which is 150cc or maybe 185cc below. These are the common motorcycles being driven or being handled by kids as early as 6 year old, 10 year old, even until 15 year old. Let me show you the statistics over the years since 2009 until 2021. I just want to just follow me through this. From 6 to 10 year old, from 2009 until 2021, 87 kids were killed for riding motorcycles. Okay, for 11 to 15 year old, from 2009 to 2021, 2,795 kids were killed. And if you're talking about, even though we let's go further to 16 to 20 year old, this is the license, what you call it, the license, the eligibility of teenagers riding motorcycle, even though we know that many of them are unlicensed riders. But then let me put this, these are the highest groups, which total around 9,882 deaths since 2009 until 2021.
Right.
So, I mean,
thousands of deaths. Fatalities.
If we look at 11 to 15 years old, it's 2,795. Okay, make it 2,800. Mm. 2,800 deaths among 11 to 15 year old. Just imagine, is there any other cause in Malaysia for having this the reason behind it. For example, we don't see any other. We are lucky we don't have gun violence in Malaysia, or even drugs, major drugs problem among kids. These are actually the problems for kids in Malaysia, and nobody is paying attention.
Why do you think they don't pay attention to it?
Because it's common, it's occurring everywhere. It's common to see kids riding motorcycle, going to school, just pushing taman, you know, going around the recession area.
Is it a difficult policy issue to deal with, you reckon, for authorities?
Is to me, it's already abandoned in the society. The parents, they don't mind. Even kids, they started riding with something like, can I borrow your motorcycle? I want to go to the kedai.
Right, right. I mean, I think of, you know, even in my own kampung, we have, it's a common practice to just nip out to go, and even parents will say, can you go and buy me something at the shop? And the kids will do that. And I think that kind of normalizes that behavior.
Yeah.
But it's a serious issue, you're saying.
It's a very, very serious issue. This is common because, okay, let's put it this way. 30 or 40 years ago, we know parents, they have bicycles, okay? It's common because now the economics, the income of the family is getting better. So they are getting motorcycles, which is understandable. But what I'm saying is, 30 or 40 years ago, it used to be bicycle. So whatever the parents have, the kids will have it right. From time to time, and they just borrow the bicycle to the town, to the pekan, to the whatever they want to do, to the grocery, buy some groceries, whatever. But then now this is common in any kampung suburbs or even in housing areas to see kids riding motorcycles. The parents, they don't care. I'm not saying that all of them don't care. It's just a society. Maybe the parents they're not at home because they are working. But it's already normal, and I just mentioned about deaths alone. I'm yet to mention about injuries.
Right, right.
If we are talking about injuries alone for 6 to 10 year old over the years from 2009 to 2021, injuries 632. Injuries involving young bikers 11 to 15 year old 7,355.
Wow. Okay, so these are, you know, preventable, but also these injuries could be life-changing and a potential inhibiting. Professor Kulan, if I may bring you into the conversation, when we talk about children on roads, what are the limitations of, you know, for children being able to understand the rules of the road safety, being able to maneuver vehicles like a motorcycle, or to understand oncoming traffic? You've worked with a program that teaches kids to be safe on roads. What is the understanding of how children perceive road safety and the limitations to respond to it?
First, we need to make everyone aware that children do have limitations. So when they have limitations, it means they are not fit to be on the road by themselves for a certain age, and they need to be accompanied by an adult. Okay, let me tell you, what are those limitations? The first limitation is in terms of vision. This is especially for children, say, below age 8. And you can also cross it close to about even up to 10 years old. In terms of vision, they can see as an adult, but their vision is only up to one-third of an adult. So if an adult, I can see 180 degrees, they can only see up to 60 degrees.
Oh.
So if there is a vehicle coming from on my right-hand side, until it falls within that range of 60 degrees, they won't be able to see. So you can't blame the kid why you didn't see the car when it was coming. The kid didn't see it. The kid doesn't have the capacity to see, because that's the limitation. But as the car enters the 60 degrees zone, then they're able to see. But then it might be too close. You can't prevent a crash. So this limitation, everyone need to know. The kids need to know, the parents need to know, and all the other road users need to know. So that when they see a kid, they know that if they can see the kid, doesn't mean the kid has seen them.
Right.
This is very crucial. Second is in terms of vision. Vision is the kids can hear the sound, but not the direction of the sound until the source of the sound gets closer to them. So if I put a kid in a junction, the kid can hear the sound of the vehicle approaching, but may not know is the vehicle is coming from the right or left.
Right.
Until the source of that sound or the vehicle is getting closer to them, then they know, oh, it's coming from the right. But if they had thought it's coming from the left and they make a decision of crossing, then they can't prevent a crash. So these are two main things.
Okay.
The other one is a kid has some limitation where when they see the vehicle in front of them, is that a moving vehicle or is it a static?
Or they can't see whether make that decision whether it's stationary or not.
Stationary or moving. Because our roads are sometimes, if the roads are smooth, very difficult for us to differentiate a moving vehicle and a static vehicle.
Especially if light is poor. Right. Mm.
And sometimes this limitation is not only for kids, even for adults.
Yes, I agree.
When we are driving on a highway, sometimes you may not know whether there is a parked car or is a moving car. Mm. So just imagine when we ourselves have that limitation, the kids may also have. And if the kids make a wrong decision, thinking that is a non-moving vehicle, and they make a decision to move to the road, and the car approaches, and so crash.
Okay.
The fourth is, they think is, when I can see the vehicle, it means the vehicle has seen me. But not necessary. For a driver, in my windscreen, there are many things I need to see. I need to see the vehicle in front of me. I need to see my own vehicle. I need to see all the signboards and everything, the traffic lights. In all that thing, the child object is very small object for me in the windscreen. So there is a possibility we may miss out. Mm. And the other limitations if we see a kid is, the kid thinks, if I see the vehicle, if I decide to stop, I can stop immediately. So therefore, if the car has seen me, the car can stop immediately. But that's not the case. For a car, if I'm driving a car, if I see a kid there and I press my brake, my car won't stop immediately. My car needs some time and some space to get it stopped. Mm. But the kid will not know. So that is the limitation the kid has.
Okay.
So knowing these are the limitations, so very obvious, the kids cannot make a safe decision on the road. Therefore, they need to be accompanied by an adult every time on the road, especially those kids below age 8. I would even extend it even up to primary school to be on the safe side.
Okay. Right. All right. Not too young to learn about road safety. But given all these limitations, gentlemen, is education then the way forward? Would educating children about the dangers of riding underage without a license, educating children about pedestrian safety, about ways to avoid traffic collisions, given these limitations, would education be the way forward, Prof. Kulan?
Yeah, education is a must. I would always say education is a must. But education only is not sufficient. These two things has to be very clear. Education is a must, but education only is not sufficient. We need to combine education with other interventions in order to see a better result. Of course, what we are saying is the kids has limitation. But of course, the education for the kids has to be given, but it's not to encourage them to go on the road alone. The education is to tell them that you need to be on the road together with your parents, accompanied by the parents. That education has to be given. So therefore, education is important, not only for the kids.
Right.
Don't forget, it's for their adults, for their parents, for all the type of
Right. Well, if you educate the kid, they might then pressure the family, as you've talked about.
Yeah, it can be a spillover effect.
Yeah, spillover.
For us to make a change in terms of behavior, to change an adult's behavior is a bit more challenging because they have already formed certain behavior. But if you do it for a kid who has not formed certain behavior, so when there is a gap, and then you pluck in with what you want, a safe behavior, and hopefully that translates into a culture.
Mm.
All we need to do now is let them practice the safe behavior for a certain period. Once it's being practiced for a certain period, then it becomes a culture. Once it becomes a culture, then it's sustainable. Then after that, you can disengage with them.
Sharon, what do you think? With the issue of underage riders, is education the way? Teaching children the dangers, the risks, is that enough to change what has been very normalised behaviour?
It's not. Of course, definitely it's not enough. We're talking about education. Actually, we are already in lifelong education. If you're talking about kids and about adults. We have had education since we are in standard one, probably until college, until university, maybe 13 or 15 years of education. But if we're talking about kids, education has been all around. In fact, I know that road safety education in school have been going around. They already improved in the past 7 years. And we think that the result we might see in the next probably 10 to 15 years. So this is a long-term vision. But we have to remember, it's a surrounding. We have given a lot to them, but then it's surrounding this family, the neighbors, the society, their peers, the peer pressure. And then a lot of them, especially, no offense to those staying in PPR or even towns or even kampongs, most of them, their passions, their good friends. That's where they develop their skills on these motorbikes. That's where they develop their camaraderie, say their friendships. They consider them as brothers or maybe sisters. This is always the influence of their surrounding. It can give a lot of education, many things. We can talk about this is wrong, this is right. They know it is not right. They know this is a vehicle for adults. They know that it's not all right for them to drive on open road or even on the main road. But then that's how it is in this society.
So what would you like to see being done to address this specific issue?
We need to change the type of vehicle.
Change
of the type of vehicle, especially for kids from 16 to 20, those eligible for motorcycle license. I'm talking about, and also we need to change this mode of transport because more and more, I'm not saying that we should phase out the captchai. Yes, it's next to impossible to phase out captchai. But what I'm trying to say is we need to introduce something like bring back bicycles, okay. And then we have to talk about also the built environment. The built environment also in towns, in kampungs, is not that conducive anymore, not like in those days. Now we have to bring in like the perhaps electric moped, electric bicycle or electric motorcycle, low powered, maybe below 50 kilometers or 60 kilometers an hour. What I'm trying to say is introduce a new type of vehicle for 16 to 20 years. This is the entry levels. Because in UK and also in Japan, these teenagers, they cannot ride a motorcycle more than 70cc, or in fact, probably more than 90cc. In UK, if I'm not mistaken, they can only ride a scooter below 70cc, or even in Japan, below 90cc. And then they can only ride it for the first 3 years, just like our P
license
probation. But now the kids nowadays, from 16 to 20, 16, the entry level, they are already exposed to 185cc. The captchai nowadays are very powerful, agile, mobile. It has good technologies, which is good. It has good safety features. Okay, it is fine. But you have to remember, they are kids. Powerful vehicle. I mean, like Professor Cullen says, they have the limitation. They are having lack of experience, and we allow them to ride on a powerful motorcycle. And those from 11 to 15, as young as 6 to 10 years old. And it goes down, you know, the tradition. When they say they're abang, they're brothers, or even the sisters, riding motorcycles. And it's okay. Even the father say that it's okay. Until something happens, then they will blame, you know, the takdir or you know, every time.
So stop it before it happens and change that culture. You're saying the way to do this is to change the type of vehicle.
Change of type of vehicle and also be firm on enforcement. Actually, there are already enforcement in Malaysia, if you're talking about this. Let me quote you. Section 29, in bracket 1 of the Road Transport Act, 1907, states that no person under the age of 16 shall drive a motor vehicle on the road. The Section 39, in bracket 5 of the RTA, states any person who drives or causes or permits any person to drive a motor vehicle in contravention of this section shall be guilty of an offence and shall, on conviction, be liable to a fine not exceeding R2,000 or to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 6 months or to both. But the question is, are the authorities doing something about this? Against the parents or even against the vehicle owners? I have the statistics as well, if you don't mind.
Sorry, we're running out of time, but that's interesting because who is accountable for the child on the motorcycle?
The parents.
The parents, and are they liable if anything happens?
They are.
Legally liable.
Legally, under the Child Act. They have it,
right? Okay.
But then it's not enough. For some reason, the DPP or even the AGC, Attorney General Chambers in Putrajaya, they are not agreeable to this. Right. I can tell you that.
We're running short of time, but I do want to just very quickly say final remarks. I mean, Professor Cullen, with your program that you're working with schools to create awareness about pedestrian road safety for children, can you tell us very quickly a little bit about that and how maybe schools can get in touch or if they're interested to expand this program?
Yeah. We have started a new initiative called VR Creative, where mainly focusing on pedestrian safety for those children whom are walking towards school and coming back. And this initiative is where we are using the visual arts subjects. So it's a knowledge transfer program from us to these visual arts teachers, and then from visual arts teachers transfers to the children. And the beauty behind this exercise is it's not a one-way approach, it's also two-way, where the children's, after getting the knowledge from the teachers being transferred, they will be able to identify the risk in front of their school, specifically in front of their school. So every school, the risk factors will be different completely.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. So after identifying the risk in front of their school, they are also able to go to the next level by looking at what is a possible solution to reduce that risk. Because once they know the risk and once they know the solution, then they can benefit from the exercise, and that will make their travel safe after this, every day towards the school. And for us to gauge whether what we transferred they understood or not is when we ask them to portray in a form of visual arts exactly what happens outside their school, the hazards and the solution.
Okay.
So once they can do that, that means we know that
they've understood it.
The knowledge has been transferred, they know the hazard and they know the solution. So the whole ultimate aim is after this, with the hope that all kids who travel to school while walking will be safe.
Okay. Well, you know, this conversation is goes far beyond the half an hour that we have on the show today. Hope to continue this conversation with both of you, and I think the work that you're doing is very important. Thank you so much for being on the show today, sharing some of your insights with us. That's all we have for you on this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris, signing off the evening. Thank you so much for watching, and good night.